GAA podcast on RTE.ie, sponsored by Optimum Nutrition. No matter your goal, if you're putting it in, we'll help you get more out. Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partner of the Gaelic Players Association.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point, and there's the whistle. It's over! It's over!
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it! What? It's over the bar!
Hello everyone, welcome along to the RTE GAA podcast, week one of the Alliance Leagues, and plenty to talk about. Shane McGrath is going to be with us very shortly to chat hurling, but Enda McGinley is with us to talk through the football. I'm just going to fly through the results very quickly for anybody who missed them. In Division 1, Galway 112, Armagh 9 points, Tyrone 213, Derry 19, Dublin 117, Mayo 115, and Kerry Donegal called off with the weather. In Division 2, Meath 21 points, Cork 219, Monaghan 222, Cavan 20 points, the highest ever scoring game between those two teams. Roscommon 321, Down 120, definitely that won the game of the weekend. Louth 117. Westmeath 18 points. So loads to chat through, Enda, in terms of like not even the specifics of the games, but I think the wider thing on the new rules. So what you like, what didn't you like, what did you think worked over the weekend?
Yeah, I think everybody's making the same caveat this year. We always make it the first round of the National League anyway, and that you can't interpret too much about where various teams are, where the form lines are, etc., etc. Well, this year you're not even looking at form lines or where teams are at, because that's almost not even in our thinking. It's purely looking at the rules and the impact on the game. There is swings and roundabouts. There is things that appear to be working and you can really see legs with. There's other things that you'd be dubious enough on. I think the impact this weekend has to be further caveated by the fact a lot of the pitches were in really, really poor nick. Was played in a storm. A lot of the ones we still had a sort of a further storm rolling in. So exceptionally difficult conditions, but enough there for food for thought. There was enough for me. You've got people at either end of the spectrum, people that want huge change and want to see huge change, other people that are against that very same change. I think there's enough there for everybody. There was enough of the normal game. I don't think anybody wants to see a brand new game that we don't recognize. I think in the games that I watched, the game was still very, very recognizable, but it was more open, which is exactly what we're looking for. There was more space there and even more opportunities that I think teams will learn to exploit as times go on. But players aren't going to change overnight. Teams aren't going to change overnight. I think for all of us, we're watching a game that we don't fully understand now. That puts all of us in a pretty uncomfortable position. We don't know what's going on, even management. So we're all got the L plates up on this, but I certainly didn't see anything of massive concern that it won't give several more weeks of due thought and watching it and enjoying it and enjoying what teams are making of it.
Yeah, I think Enda's right though, Rory. The difference in some teams are adapting to it, some teams aren't. It does still look like new football meets old football, and maybe there's a middle ground here that we're going to find over the next few weeks.
That's it. Nailed in a nutshell. I think, though, that the score lines you listed out at the very beginning there, Jackie, are very indicative of, you can almost, you know, draw a straight line from the score lines to the teams that embrace the new rules and really try to utilize them versus the teams that are still maybe caught in an older way of playing the game, but kind of maintaining the traditions that have maybe been successful for them, and Galway Armagh being the classic example. Now, having said that, I still thought there was plenty in that game in terms of the new rules to be enthused about. Thought Galway's use of the solo and go, I think, was striking. They seemed to kind of run the ball every time they got a free, and maybe that's something that you could question from a managerial point of view and a tactics point of view. Is that wise? But they were trying to keep the pace as high as they could, I suppose. Obviously, Armagh sat in. I think what's going to be really interesting as the rules evolve and as people start to get used to them more and more is what will incentivize and what will be the payoff here if you really embrace them. Will it be the team that introduces a much more attacking element? I mean, the Roscommon Down game was a classic example, where obviously it was a real game of two halves because the wind was howling a gale down one end of the field, and I think we saw, was it nearly 9 or 10 two-pointers like that happened over the course of the game, which was an extraordinary number, but obviously the wind was a huge factor in aiding that, and that contributed to the scoreline. We saw a goalkeeper getting caught out for the 12 versus 11. We saw the dissent where not handing the ball back was penalised with a 50. We had everything in that Roscommon down game that you would want in the new rules, good and bad. But not to rake over a really painful subject for Enda, and my commiserations, and obviously on the All-Ireland Club Final, I thought you guys made a real fantastic game of it in the end. But I was in at the game, and I brought my young lad in, and we were sat there, and I was very, very curious as to what Coola would do with the Canavans. And this isn't to slight upon Coola. They were just utilising the rules as they saw fit. But Coola played pretty much 15 players inside their own 45 and created a swamp for both Dara and Rory that they were never going to get ball from. And I said, like, if you ever wanted an example whereby the old rules do not reward attacking play, do not provide a platform for the Stars to get on possession of the ball, this was the perfect example. Obviously, the game opened up a little bit more in the second half, and you guys very, very nearly got yourselves back into it and kicked that free. Would have brought it back to a 2-point game, no doubt. But I thought the indicative nature of a game being played with the old rules, where you can basically drop the entire team inside your own 45 versus what we saw over the weekend, was night and day. And I think I heard Jim Gavin this morning say he would rate it as a pass. I would give it a pass plus. You know, I think it was better than that. And I think there's plenty for us to really be enthused about. I think Gaelic football is in a better place this morning than it was this time 12 months ago.
I'll update myself or refresh myself of RTE's policies about getting PTSD triggered during an online pod. Yeah. We'll skip over that. But for me, the game management, like, teams have got so good at game management, and one of the things is keeping ball off your own kickouts. That's much more difficult now. One of them is using your keeper in your own half and keeping the ball. So the game management things is less able. You're less able to hold the ball comfortably when attacking, because you that absence of your goal plus one in your own half. But the wind for me is a massive. Now, we live on a windy little island, and Galway were getting a bit critiqued in terms of being very conservative in the first half, but they were playing into the wind. So yes, you can kill time by going down injuries and losing a ball here or there, stuff like that, but you can also kill time by holding the ball. So they chose to hold the ball quite a bit, particularly in the first half. Armagh chose not to put them under massive pressure to try to get that ball back, but it's going to be critical given the impact of the 2-pointers. And you've seen it again in the Down Roscommon game. Down were well down in the first half, came out with the wind, started going for their 2-pointers, and suddenly then the swings in the game can be massive. The impact of having that wind is massive, because of your scoring potential is much greater than it used to be. So the team's ability to both hold against the wind and avoid conceding too much against the wind, and also the pressure on, if you're playing with the wind, you cannot afford to let your opponent play around with the ball. Every minute counts, every shot you can have at those goals counts. So I think, again, during the National League in particular, given it's a windier time of year, that will be a bigger factor.
But if that's the case, then your goalkeeper is so crucial, Enda, because, like, you're looking at the weekend there, like, Rory Beggins kicking 6 points, like, that's 3 2-pointers, which is absolutely massive. I heard Paddy Talley saying, and I know it's only after week one, and maybe this was a rash comment, but he said the 12th man is killing the game. You know, so it's like, on one hand, we're saying this is going to be amazing, we can totally revolutionise one position. But on the other hand, you do have some managers who are going to say this is absolute madness and there's no way we can do that because of the wind and factors like that.
Yeah, absolutely. The goalkeeper rule is probably the one that's going to draw the biggest attention in both sides of the game. I think one thing that I thought I would have seen more of, I only seen very brief moments of it over the weekend, was teams really pressing opposition defenders in their
pushing
own half.
Yeah.
Classically, defenders, this is always, I'll get the wrath of the fullback line union here.
I know what's coming here.
But classically, the full back line players are not your most comfortable players. If you're looking at your 15, they're not your most, they have other talents. So whenever a team has 12 in their own half, can't use the goalkeeper, and you have 12 against them, there's an opportunity there to make it really sticky for them getting out. So I don't think that has, that element of the goalkeeper rule has changed, but certainly the potential for a plus one up the pitch, there's variations in terms of how teams will try to deal with that, how aggressively they push with that. Very few teams across the island have a keeper of the potential of Niall Morgan.
Correct.
So there is outliers there. And teams always have had particular strengths to their bow. Very few have the talent of David Clifford up front either. So there is strengths to various teams. Tyrone's strength, Niall Morgan, is massive. And for as long as the rule remains as it is, then I think that will be a factor. It allows Tyrone to slow it up, buy themselves 15, 20 seconds, bring him up. And then if they were in a keep ball situation, could lead to a hugely frustrating phase of the game where Tyrone could just play keep ball and kill the game for 2-3 minutes within that half of the pitch. So that will certainly be looked at. But at the minute, the balance wasn't a million miles off. So we have to be very careful about stopping teams being creative, stopping teams being brave, stopping teams to try and chase games and make definitive differences. I think one of the teams actually subbed the goalkeeper and put on an outfield player. I think it might have been Down, possibly.
Yeah.
Subbed a keeper and put on an outfield keeper. So that sort of dynamic thing, I love that. I love that variation. I love those choices for a team to have.
And didn't Armagh make a substitution? Didn't Blaine Hughes come off at one stage when they were chasing the game and they brought on Jenny? His name escapes me now, but was it in
Well, you see, it'd be back to the Ethan Rafferty potential.
Ethan Rafferty, correct, sorry. Yeah.
You know, it would be back to that sort of potential impact as well.
Mm.
But can I ask though?
Yeah. But like the one thing I would, it is risk reward. And I think the way the new rules are set up, I think they have incentivized greater risk taking. But I would ask anyone now, looking at last year's All Ireland football final, for instance, which finished 13 points to 111, if memory serves, right? Looking at the way the new rules are configured right now, Enda, is 111 going to win you the All-Ireland football final in 2025?
It'd be very, very hard to see it in summer conditions in Croke Park with good footballs, good surfaces. You would expect more two-pointers to be had. As that ratio goes up, teams will press the two-pointer more, and then you get more gaps in behind. So that's the balance of it.
Adapts, though, Enda. The two teams who played in the All-Ireland final at the weekend, it was 112 to 9 points. Like, they didn't bother playing all of that, you know. So they do have to adapt if you are going to get the change you're looking for.
But that was in winter conditions in Salt Hill with a storm blowing.
It's always winter. It's always winter in Salt Hill.
And Armagh just back from the Ireland break, where traditionally teams have a bit of dirty diesel still in them to iron out, not at a part in the Armagh dirty diesel.
I was just going to say, don't mention diesel in Armagh.
That's a dodgy one. But for me, the biggest question as the dust gradually settles is all the rules required? Are they, like, there's no medical thing about if you treat something with 5-6 different drugs, you don't know which drug actually works or what intervention actually works. Our game feels very, very confused at the minute. And one of the hopes of the FRC, I remember right back at the start, is to actually simplify things and to clarify things. There is layers of detail and layers of little subtle differences. It's pretty difficult to get your head around everything at the minute. The two-point arc adds a huge layer of complexity, not just to the watching of it and the judging of it on the pitch, but which frees can come out, which frees can't come out, what is your options there? I think the three up, the likes of the three up, the solo and goal, I think they are making obvious differences. The role of the goalkeeper can make an obvious difference in a team's ability to keep ball. But I suppose everybody will have their certain things, and it's very hard to move away from a bias that you come into it and sort of seeking confirmation of your own thoughts. The two-point arc for me, I just don't know whether we're killing the value of brilliant one-point scores like our going back to the club, to a happier time in the club. Our game against Dr. Crokes, Ergyll v. Dr. Crokes, was seen as a brilliant game. And the quality of the point taken and the quality of the scores by both teams was brilliant, hugely entertaining. There was only one of those points was outside the arc. Like basketball, it's well sort of storied in basketball. They have sort of teams have figured out the data that, well, if you keep shooting three-pointers, even if it missed, you still overall do better than working good baskets for the standard scores. So Gaelic, I wouldn't want Gaelic to become a game where teams just lump the ball. So if you're going to have 10 shots, if you score, say, 4 or 5 of them from outside the arc, well, that's 8 or 10 points. Inside the arc, you might only get 7 of them. So that's 7 points. So you're better to just lump shots in, big drives of ball from outside the 45. Like Hurling is querying the benefit of people being able to score from way down their own half because it takes away some of the intricacies and some of the beautiful skills and some of the beautiful scores. So that's the bit that's most up in the air for me. But in general, the games were more open. That's the first thing we need to achieve. And if that's achieved, there might be some rules you like, some rules you don't. But I've seen enough in the opening weekend to think, okay, we're potentially onto something.
I think that's the way I feel, Rory, overall. There is enough there to be positive about. I heard Eamon Fitz last night on League Sunday saying, look, be patient, it's only the first week, but look at all the scores. And he's absolutely right. If you'd have told me that Monaghan Cavan would be 222 to 20 points, I would have said no chance. Roscommon down 53 points in total. Conor Glass scoring what I would describe as one of the greatest goals I've ever seen.
What a goal that was.
Like, attacking football is alive. Like, I think that's what we should be celebrating because we're always giving out about football.
Yeah, and the other thing as well that I thought was quite interesting, and Enda made mention of it as well, and I've heard this now, I think the lads mentioned it as well last night. Like, historically, certainly within the last number of years, if you went 2 or 3 or 4 points down in a major championship match, it was very, very difficult to get back into the game. Mm. It was almost nigh on impossible because teams were saying, look, if we don't concede a goal, this crowd aren't going to kick from way out the field. And it was, the games were sort of petering out into almost non-contests. Now what you're seeing, certainly like this was very apparent in the Roscommon down game, which as I said, had everything, but I'm sure there were other fixtures as well, which we didn't see. I don't know what way it worked. But if you have a 4 or 5 point lead now, much like Hurling, it's tenuous. Like you have to really, you're not guaranteed to go and win the game just because you might go 4 or 5 points up because 2 kicks, 2 two-pointers, and all of a sudden it's game on again. I think that it adds an element of intrigue and adds an element of suspense that I think Gaelic football was missing. I think if you have, like, I mean, I think Roscommon with the Murtas have some fantastic distance shooters. They could be somebody that could make massive hits. We saw how enthusiastic Davy Burke was after the game. He loved him. He couldn't see any fault whatsoever because he probably knows internally some of the distance shooters he has with the likes of the Murtas and the Darragh Craigs, etc., that he's got major weapons in his arsenal here. So look, every coach will probably put a slant on it depending on the personnel that they have available to them in terms of which rules work for them and which rules don't. Enda is correct in that there's a whole suite of these have come in all at the same time, which has maybe caused an element of confusion, which I'd be a small bit worried about drifting down into club level. And that's a whole other ball game, as we know. But I think by and large, this is a discovery period. And I think we have to stick with it now for another 3-4 weeks and see what sort of trends. I think it's unfortunate, actually. What's really unfortunate for me was that we didn't get to see Donegal or Kerry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I would have been fascinated to see both teams and how what their interpretation of these new rules would have been, because two counties with a tradition of, you know, being very innovative and good thinkers around the game. So look, that'll obviously come next weekend. But from my point of view, I'm loving it, but I suppose, you know, we football was in a dark place and it needed something radical. This is radical. Is it too radical? Time will tell.
Yeah. All right. Last word to you then, Enda. Rory's right. We haven't seen Kerry. We haven't seen Donegal. So it's very hard to tell. But of the teams you did see at the weekend, who are you sort of feeling optimistic about? These people have adapted and who's looking good after weekend one, do you think?
Jeez, Tyrone.
I suppose not to heap pressure on our own county, but I think Tyrone, with the footballing talent that they have, athletic ability. Like, so a footballing goalkeeper is bonus points here. Big midfielders. I thought Brian Kennedy was immense at the weekend. So big midfielders are key to be able to win that premium possession, because there's going to be more contested. Key man marking defenders is going to be key, because they're more one-to-one battles. And then really sharp forwards, great shooters up front. And Trone has a panel that ticks all those boxes. But I think Galway have a team, and Armagh have teams well set up for it. Dublin, Mayo, Kerry, like, I think all the teams are still well set up for it and well able for it. It will be the bit of craft and the inside line to create goal chances, that ability to go between going from a 2-point attack to suddenly then slip in and be straight in on goal. Those wee changes are going to be massive. And the teams that can wrestle some sort of control, because these games are chaotic at the minute. The teams that best manage, how do you start controlling these games? Now, hopefully from a spectator's point of view, they don't, they can't. But I'd imagine the teams that start to be able to wrestle back a wee bit of control and be able to control their own pace of this game and then play at high pace at other times, the teams that manage that, which you're expecting to see more so at county level than at club level in the initial phase of these rules, I think that team will be well placed. Big thing for me of the weekend, the descent, the 50-metre penalties, yeah. That's a big thing. That's going to come down to consistency. The referees have to try to be consistent. We've got the first taste of it, and if that remains consistent, teams will really, really quickly learn to avoid that. But if it's inconsistent, it's just going to be the penalties are so severe that is going to be a huge source of angst. And then, ironically enough, the hooter, like I remember... big discussion point for years. Do we bring in a hooter? Do we bring not in a hooter? It's a big change, blah, blah. It's in. It's that small of a change in the scheme or the scale of what we're looking at. You're not even thinking twice. All right, the hooter's in as well. Okay, shrug the shoulders, move on, because everything else is so big. So there's a lot to get used to. The crowds are up. Anecdotally, just looking, I thought the crowd dropped. I think that, and that's in a really bad weekend in terms of weather.
There was a bigger crowd at Dublin Mayo on Saturday night than there was at the Leinster football final.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so if crowds are up and interest up and there's a buzz about, I think we all win.
Yep. I could not agree more. Lots for us to keep our eyes on over the next couple of weeks, but we'll leave the football there for now. Enda, thanks a million for being with us.
No problem, folks.
He hits it! He hits it! It's over the bar! Oh! Holy Moses!
All right, Shane McGrath is with us now to chat hurling. And in Division 1, three big away wins, it has to be said. Tipperary 325, Galway 216, Kilkenny 23 points, Clare 21 and Cork 221, beating Wexford as well on the road. And I think, Shane, to be honest, when you look at those three results, three great wins on the road, but the biggest one, it's got to be Tip. Tip are back, baby.
No bad language, no. I tell you, it was a great win for Tip. It really was, because I see Liam Cahan's interview and I kind of get what he's saying. He was saying that the more knowledgeable or the less knowledgeable hurling people in Tip, they mightn't understand. Like, say, there's almost this expectation in Tip by a lot of people that we have this right to be, you know, up there and getting to All-Ireland finals every year, when we don't, like, because let's be honest, we've lost nearly all of one of the greatest generations of hurlers we've ever had that I was lucky to play with, and that maybe Noel is the last of them now on the panel. And they're all gone. Like, you know, at this time of the year, you might be saying, oh, sure, Bonner will be back, or Paddy will be back, and Brendan will be back, and Shane will be back. But that day is done now. And what we have is we have to understand that you won't replace a generational talent like that anywhere in any county. It's the same when it happens in Limerick. They have the greatest generation of hurlers they've ever had in the history of their county. They'll find it hard to replace those and to be competitive like they are now. It happened in Kilkenny. They found it hard to replace, you know, one of the greatest generation of hurlers they've ever had. And it's the same in Tip. And what we're doing now, Jackie, is there's a rebuild going on, and most hurling people know that. And that's where the big positive is for a lot of hurling people in Tip, is that yesterday we got to see six guys line out for the Tipperary senior hurling team for the first time. And it's absolutely brilliant. They all did very well. They acquitted themselves well. Just from my own experience playing in Salt Hill, Jackie, it's a very, very hard place to play. Even on the Cam Estate, there's a breeze there coming in off the ocean. It's, you know, the ground, when it's full, it can be an intimidating place, and the Galway crowd get behind their team. And obviously the pitches are what they are, lads. I mean, some people are saying to me, I suppose, that the pitches didn't look great. But I suppose, what do we expect, lads? We've had the worst storm nearly in the history of the country.
Two storms in a week, and it's January.
And it's January. And like, to be fair, a massive kudos has to go to all the people for even getting the pitches playable when we seen the amount of games were called off. So in that regard, it was brilliant for Tip. It was brilliant for Tip hurling fans to see these new guys coming through. They would have been well known, Jackie, I suppose, within Tip as regards to Sam O'Farrell, would have been captain of the minors a few years ago. Mikey Corcoran, a lot of people will know Mikey. Dylan Walsh he's Liam Cahill's club man for Ballingarry. You know, he's well able mind himself. He gets a lot of treatment at club level and he's a great talent. And, you know, I suppose, well, so we have Andy Armand there as well. And like these guys are known, well known in Tip, but the way they stood up to the challenge and a very, very physical challenge now Galway yesterday, I think that's the biggest plus for us in Tip is that there is talent there. It might take a little bit of time to come through, but you know what? It will come through sometime.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing, Rory. You expect that it's going to come through sometime. It's just people in Tipperary have not necessarily been the most patient people in waiting for that to happen.
I think he wants to get the supporters to start to come back in behind him. I definitely think the crowd that turned up for the Cork Tip match last year shocked a lot of Tipperary people to be outnumbered in that way. And there seemed to generate some sort of disconnect between the Tipperary supporters and the team itself. So I suppose from Liam Cahill's point of view, he's trying to carve out a new identity with effectively a whole bunch of new players while also navigating. And we shouldn't forget that the Fitzgibbon Cup is in its peak at the minute, which means a lot of players from Galway as well were, they have a lot of commitments elsewhere, and there's another lash of games, obviously, again this week. I think you're involved with a Fitzgibbon Cup team, Shane, so you'd know that more acutely than most. But I'd say it was hugely encouraging. Their work rate all across the field, 5 points from their half-back line. That's another massive positive. I think they look like they're in good condition. They've had a very good off season. It's still only January, but I think the signs are very, very positive already from a Tip perspective.
For Micheál Donoghue, I heard him after the game, Shane, saying, look, it's not about survival in 1A. We're trying to build a team. And much like Tipperary, they had 4 debutants yesterday. Totally new scenario. He's dealing with all those problems that Rory has outlined. It's probably challenging for him now, though, having to go to Kilkenny next weekend and already after week 2 potentially chasing something, because you look at Kilkenny, the performance they put in at the weekend. It's not easy in this division to stay there if you do find after the first 2 weeks that you're climbing a hill.
Yeah, 100%, Jackie. And you know what? That's the way it should be. That's the way the league should be. We gave long enough, I suppose, on this or talking amongst people to say there's no jeopardy in the league or there's nothing to lose in the league. Whereas now we have 2 up, 2 down, there is real jeopardy. And there seemed to be
a bit more honesty in the competitive nature of the fixtures, Shane. Yeah. Would that be fair?
Oh, 100%. Like, that was a very physical game there. Or even in the challenge games leading up to this, guys. I know there's no Munster League, no Walsh Cup. Like, say, Tip played Dublin a few weeks ago and it was a serious physical game, and that people knew that this is our, we're using this to get ready what is in essence, you know, a prelim for the championship in every way, because it's 5-6 really competitive games. You lose your first game, you're in serious trouble. That's the way it's going to be in Leinster Championship. That's the way it's going to be in Munster Championship. But what you have there now is teams know that they're in serious trouble. And if you take Galway now, for example, whoever lost Tip in Galway yesterday, it was going to be tough going, right? Because next week, Galway have to play Kilkenny and they have to go to Kilkenny. The following week, they have to play Clare, who are after losing their game and know that they're going to be in serious trouble. So this is the way the league should be. It should be competitive. It should be, you know, something to play for all the time. You know, obviously it will come to game 5 or game 6, and there might be some teams safe and there might be some teams gone. But do you know what? I'd say for the most of it, there's going to be something to play right up to the last day. And that's what we want. We want the top teams all playing against each other with something to play for, whilst having one eye on the bigger prize, which is championship. And it's a great preparation for it. And if I could just touch on a couple of learnings like yesterday from it, like what Rory said there. Like yesterday was a massive learning for Darren McCarthy in that he's an unbelievable dead ball striker. He's the best in the county. Because if you think he's taking the frees ahead of Gerard O'Connor, Jason Ford, who would in a lot of other counties would nearly be the free taker. And Darren McCarthy has stepped up. A little bit of pressure, but no bother to him coming from Toome. He'd be well used to it. He was the best club player in Tip last year. But what he learned from open play yesterday, you just can't buy, because he was marking Fintan Burke and he found it hard going on Fintan in open play. But that's worth 2, 3, 4 weeks of training to him to say, right, Fintan Burke, as physical as they come at the top level, maybe I'm going to have to change what I do. Dara's a very physical guy, well able to mind himself. But I just think even the learnings that the likes of him, we'll talk about Clare and Kilkenny in a minute, what a couple of the Clare lads would have learned from the physicality that the Kilkenny boys brought to it. And that's another big plus for Tip, is that what they learned, what these younger guys learned, that up front, in your face, this is what physicality is, a top level hurling against the top teams. You know, you go and play the Limericks of this world and you know what physicality is. And but you can't teach that. Like, you can't show that in a video. You have to go out and you have to live it and you have to breathe it. And that's what the lads did yesterday. From a Galway point of view, lads, you know, they have lost some big, big guys. Garrod McInerney, Joseph Cooney, Adrian Toohey, these kind of guys. They're hard to replace too. And Michal has made it very clear, you know, this is a transition period as well for them. And they have a lot of new guys there yesterday. And it will take time. But I suppose the nature of the league, like we've all said here, is that you mightn't get too much time. If you lose your second game, you could be looking at relegation straight away. So no time for feeling sorry for themselves is what I'm trying to say, Jackie. They got to get it up. They got to get up to the pitch of it again. Back in the gym tonight, maybe probably back pitch session tomorrow night, and get ready to go to Kilkenny for, you know, what essentially could be a do or die game for them in terms of their league and where they're going to be in a few weeks' time.
And I do think, Jackie, and I do think that the new league format should be applauded. I think the seven-team structure, I think, is really interesting as well. It thereby guarantees one team each week a bye week. So it's all about how you plan your bye week and how you figure out what you might want to do, whether it's taking stock. Obviously, Limerick's bye week came in the very first week, so they were able to sit back, get a good look at maybe how the other teams are looking to try and treat the league. And obviously, they played a challenge match against Waterford in the Gaelic grounds. Apparently, it was really competitive, 121-18. I think it finished up. So I think, because Waterford were on their bye week, obviously, in the other division. So, like, I think that this new format, two up, two down, the necessity to try and maintain the ability to play all the top teams, and whether that is in Division 1A or 1B, the honesty that it's going to bring with relegation promotion, no league semi-finals, which I think were a little bit of a waste of time, really. Yeah. And I think it's a big positive from a hurling perspective going into 25.
Mm. What sort of a position do you think Brian Lowen is in then, Shane, with that in mind? Because there is that one less game, potentially not having to worry about a league semi-final. I actually don't even think being in a league final, I don't really think he would care that much about it this year. Because I think when you are the hunted, which Clare haven't been for quite some time, it must be a different scenario for them even building now.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I don't know, like they have their league medals, like, you know, I mean, yeah. Their mountain to climb now as a group, I believe Gerlach Nann said it actually at the medals.
K2.
I think he said K2 is a Munster championship. Like, and I mean, yeah, it's mad to think that, like, these guys have two All-Ireland medals and they've no Munster championship. Mm. And I suppose it's more so than the Hartley Cup is precious to us in Munster. Like, the Munster
Limerick
championship.
Are Limerick going for seven in a row?
The Limerick are going for seven in a row. Like, it's absolutely nuts. And it's nuts to think, in the environment of the week-on-week games, not the where I was coming from playing, that we could have 4 or 5 weeks between a match. Do you know what I mean? Gina, you could nearly move the country, get a new job, start a new life and come back and still be in time to play the Munster semi-final. So, like, that's the nature of it. That you have to, it's unbelievable what they're doing. But to go back to Brian Lowen, I think the risk is greater than the reward, maybe, Jackie, for the likes of Clare now to get to a league final. And because you're going to be out in 2 weeks' time after it. And like yesterday, he lost his fullback in the form of Conor Lean, and he lost his centre-back in the form of David McInerney. And Clare are, you know, they're without a lot of their big names as well. And we know Shane O'Donnell is not going to feature for the league because he just has it off to a tee. And you have to admire him, the way he's able to come back physically and mentally and just be as sharp as he is. But he's the outlier. You know what I mean? We can't all be Shane O'Donnells. We can't all just kind of take a break or not do as much in terms of intensity for months and end and come back and be at our best. So Brian Lowen, I'm sure, is more worried about the injuries he has now, Jackie.
Well, at least he's off next weekend. That he can have a look at that, like, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Like, and like I said, the league final, I'd say, is the last thing in his mind now. I'd say he's thinking, what, like, okay, we have time now. Maybe we haven't heard the extent of David McInerney or Conor Lean's injuries. I suppose that's a big thing. But he's time now maybe to regroup, you know, maybe take it easy on a few of the guys, more senior guys, get a bit more, a bit more recovery into them this week rather than maybe having to push a little harder. And, you know, their next game is Galway as well. So as you said, it's very, very competitive. But what I found from watching the game yesterday was I think it was 7-8 points to 2 after maybe 10-11 minutes. And conditions are obviously a factor, but I just really admired the way Kilkenny totally changed their structure in regards that their man of the match, Mossy Keown, and whether it was an on-field thing, whether they maybe know how to do these things themselves instinctively, or whether it was an instruction in, probably an instruction in, I'd imagine, but the way they just dropped their whole half forward line deep, and they knew hitting the ball in long, it wasn't working for them. You know, it just, because of the weather, it just wasn't a good quality ball in from where the zone they were hitting it in from. They worked it through the lines, and it's because their half forward line dropped way back, and maybe none more so than Mossy Keown. An immense game for Kilkenny yesterday. Maybe, you know, I'm sure he's looking at it now, and guys who stepped away and who's still there, and you know, he was a kind of maybe an in and out guy, but he really led the team. Himself and Owen Cody were immense yesterday. But even structurally, how they changed it, and just on Clare quickly, then Jackie, we all know about their big players, but for me, I suppose there was two guys yesterday. I thought Jack O'Neill was a big, big learning for him yesterday. He got on an awful lot of ball, but a few incidents, like he got shoved out over the sideline. He got Mossy Keown, I think around Cody, got a flick off him where Kilkenny got a point. There was a big hit put in him. He tried to flick it over the one of Kilkenny lads' heads and ended up being shafted out over the line. These are all learnings, no more so than the newer guys for Tip got. And David Conroy as well at centre forward. I suppose he'd be maybe a more of an unknown in the national side of things, but internally in Clare, they know how good this guy is, the potential he has. And again, a great physical battle for him there yesterday. Got on a good bit of ball, but, you know, got some big hits as well. So, as I said, like, the learnings for these guys in this league, and because the league is so competitive, they're definitely learning. Worked several training sessions to them what they're picking up in these games, but I thought the way Kilkenny changed their structure just changed the game. Billy Drennan stepped up then, started nailing his frees. You know, the wind is bad and the weather's bad when Billy Drennan's missing frees, because he's awesome at frees. And I just thought they really just took the game to him, and just they're just Kilkenny like, aren't they? They're just never said I even Garrod Brennan coming on, he made a big difference as well. And I think it was a great win for Kilkenny, to be honest. Yeah. Like, go down to Ennis. And I know, lads, because I've been on the other side of it, clapping out the All-Ireland champions is not a nice feeling when you've lost to them the year before. And the way they lost to Clare in the semi-final, it's early days, but I'm sure it has to be a 1%er to kind of motivate them and get that win yesterday. Yeah. And they got the job done, Jackie, yeah?
Yeah. And you know what, Rory? When you haven't won there, like, it's 2013 since they last won there. So not only are they having to clap out the All-Ireland champions, but you're also thinking, like, you and I have been down there in the terraces. Like, it's an awful place to go. It's an awful hard place as a visiting spectator to even be. So, like, that is an enormous win for this Kilkenny group.
It'll give them great confidence. That's absolutely for certain. I love Cusick Park. I think
I love going to it. It's not an easy place to win.
No, it isn't. And they jealously guard their home record there. They're always very, very difficult to beat locally. And obviously their first competitive game of hurling since winning the All-Ireland, they would have wanted to put on a good show. And they did start the game in lightning fashion. I mean, I thought it was going to be extremely one-sided, but in classic Kilkenny fashion, they just knuckled down. They sort of, you know, Dalo mentioned it on the League Sunday show last night about how Kilkenny will always give you 100% no matter what, whether it's, you know, an Oireachtas Cup game right through to a championship match. And I think we saw the best traits that they can bring, even to win. As it really was winter hurling, the pitch down in Cusick Park, as we know, is always top class, but it was wintry conditions because, as we know, can be, you know, had an effect, as Shane mentioned there. Some of the free taking was a challenge, but I think overall I'd say both managers, but I'd hazard a guess that Derek Ling came away extremely pleased. He got a really good sense of where his team is at now. But I don't think Brian Lone will be too despondent about it either. I think, in fairness, they're missing Tony Kelly as well. A lot of the fellas, John Conlon, a lot of their mainstays and their leaders and the spine of the team that you would expect to see when come championship weren't there. But it was a great opportunity. As Shane mentioned, I did think Dave Conroy had an excellent game, certainly in the first half. But yeah, look, it was a fabulous game of hurling for the time of the year that it was at. And it was a superb win for Kilkenny.
Yeah, big time. Let's finish off on Division 1 then with that Cork victory against Wexford, 221 to 12 points. And I think it's probably more what did Cork learn out of this rather than Wexford, I think, Shane, because I'm sure they're going to be disappointed with the performances and a whole lot for them to pick apart. But even just listen to it on the radio the other day, it did seem like for Cork, there was a lot of learnings in it. They found out a couple of new players. They look like they're moving well. And I think that's probably what we expected we were going to get from them on that opening day.
Yeah, as an overall game, Jackie, I think I said it to you before, it was as useful now as a handbrake in a canoe, maybe to Cork, because it was so challenge matchy, like, you know, even the second half. Look, it is what it is for Keith Rossiter at the moment. Like, I mean, scoring 11 points, but like, look, like, every time I turned on the radio or turned on a podcast or something, I'd hear of another Wexford retiree. And like, the guys that they've lost, like Matthew O'Hanlon, Dee O'Keefe, Liam O'McGovern, like mainstays of their team, all-star nominees, winning all-stars, winning Leinster championships, puck of a ball from getting to an All-Ireland final in 2019. These guys, like, they're very, very hard, no more so than the Tip lads or any of these guys. Very hard to replace those guys. And I'm sure Keith Rossiter, that's what he's doing at the moment. He's trying to find replacements for him. And he knows he'll be under the cosh. He knows they'll be under pressure. They're playing Tip next and they'd have to go up to Thurles and play him. And that's going to be a tough going. But like, as regards for Pat Ryan, like, for what's coming on Saturday night, I just think they'll just have to get themselves up for this. I believe it's 30,000.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Like, I mean, that's
the North Stand is sold out, and I think the South Stand lower is sold out. But yeah, it'll be 20 plus.
It'll be savage atmosphere. Saturday night games. I love going down there. Saturday night games. I've never been disappointed on a Saturday night. Going down in Cork, whether it's down to Parky Queeve or ending up in Reardon's or somewhere after it. But like, it's just the atmosphere, the crowd, what went on last year between them in the championship. This match just builds itself up, and it's Limerick's first game as well. And for me, the interesting thing with Limerick is, this is like, you know, it's a dawn of a new age in certain ways for Limerick, in regards that, you know, is John Kiely going to stick with really the guys he's trusted down through the years who've won so much for him, and he has done so much for them on and off the field? Or is he now going to say to a few of them, here you go, and what a first test to get, like, down in Cork against Cork for a packed house. It's the closest thing to a championship game you're going to get in the league, I think, in terms of intensity, in terms of atmosphere and all the things that go with it. So as regards preparation for Cork, I'd say that they'll probably have maybe a tougher internal game maybe this week, or maybe not with what's coming Saturday. But I'm sure Pat Ryan would have looked at it. It's a job done. Again, conditions were horrendous. What will the positives he take? I mean, he's looking at number 14 there now at the moment, to say serious competition with Padraig Power playing so well.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously Dara Fitz being available to him from earlier in the year, these kind of guys, leaders out the field, Shane Kingston buzzing, you know, Hoggy looking in to say, am I going to get a chance? Will I get a chance? If I get my chance, I have to take the chance. So that's only good. And as you said, like, they've a lot of guys involved in Fitzgibbon as well. You know, both the Cork colleges are going really well at the moment, and the bulk of their teams are Cork players. So he's lots of options. I think it'll be what I'm very, very interested in see is what team lines out for Limerick. I think we have a fair idea of the Cork team, the way things are at the moment, but the Limerick team now will be interesting, and hopefully I might get the nod maybe for the radio maybe Saturday night. I wouldn't mind traveling down for that one. Now should be a cracker. Like,
oh yeah, look, it's going to be great. And I think, Rory, that's why I said about Cork, it's the learnings for him, because we know John Kiely has been setting this team up and looking at this game. He's had this earmarked for a very long time. It's really about what sort of shape Pat Ryan comes into this game on Saturday night, because no doubt about it, this is one he's going to want to win.
Big time. I think, as Shane just mentioned, it's very, very difficult to take too much from Wexford Park on Saturday night, because Wexford were so under strength. I think, look, there were a couple of positives. I think Jaron Mellerick in the full back line is definitely going to add, as long as he can remain injury free, he will definitely add a little bit of competition in that full back line. Look, Owen Downey will, as we know, be number three. It's just whether or not Jaron Mellerick can, you know, work himself into a form whereby he could supplant one of the other and get into one of the other two corners, because I definitely think there's a option there from his point of view. Cormac O'Brien, I thought, played really well. Again, another fella that could put a bit of pressure on. But look, you'd imagine when Mark Coleman comes back, he comes straight back in. Dalton, I presume, will be suspended. The lads felt very strongly last night that both were reds. So he'll be missing. He was obviously a huge figure last year in the Cork Limerick games on both occasions, because of the way he managed to kind of pull Kyle Hayes out of position. And by all accounts, Kyle Hayes played number six against Waterford over the weekend. So that's an interesting departure, with Kian Lynch togging out at midfield. So look, I think this game on Saturday night, just because of the sheer nature of the rivalry between the two teams, obviously Cork were the only team to beat Limerick last year twice. So like I would imagine Limerick are coming down with a serious bit between their teeth, and you would hope that Cork would be set up to meet fire with fire. So like, I mean, this is going to be an absolute, I think, massive crowd. Hopefully the weather is good. I'm going, got premium tickets this time, Jackie, looking forward, hey, little fancy seats, like, so looking forward to it. And yeah, it'll be like, again, the league has started really well on the weekend just gone, and what a brilliant way now to see it gather a bit of momentum with such a glamour fixture next Saturday night in Páirc Uí Chaoimh under lights.
Yeah, it's going to be box office. Okay, one last word on the Dubs then, Shane, because 125 to Antrim's 14 points, no more than what we're saying about Wexford. Difficult for Antrim in the just the fight that they're in, I guess. But I think for Dublin, just looking particularly for Niall, only coming in after the Nafina win, he obviously has been double jobbing for quite some time, but brilliant start for them this weekend.
I would say like very close to performance of the weekend, maybe, Jackie. Yeah. And like, you know, that's you're saying that with what's some great performances we've seen, like Tip and stuff, but just the nature of it, I suppose. Like, I think it was massive that they got to play in Croke Park. I think that was brilliant, first of all, you know, and the crowd that would have been in anyway, to they would have been intrigued by the football and with the new rules and everything. By the end of the game, you would have had a big crowd in there to see that as well. But obviously, like, I mean, to be able to win an All-Ireland club title with Nafina, be able to walk down to the field and then the following week be able to walk down to the field again and win your first match as an inter-county manager. I don't think Neil O'Callaghan could have asked for better, but he's a very organised guy. We all see what he did with Nafina, how well they were coached, how well they were managed, the structure they had on the sideline. I was up at the club final. I was very impressed with their composure, with their professionalism and in everything that they did as a club. And he's carried that through now with the Dublin lads. I found it very interesting, even in the challenge games, I suppose people might have seen or not seen, they were carrying squad numbers, and like Chris Crummie was wearing number 50. So he obviously has, you know, he knows the culture of Dublin hurling. He knows he's bringing in lads that the lesser maybe hurling person, they would ever have heard of him. But he knows the culture up there. He's been involved. He has his finger on the pulse up there. So that's a massive advantage for him as well, to know these guys and to see them maybe at schools level, minors level, under 20s level. And he knows that they're going to be worth their go as well. So I think we're going to see a lot of guys playing for Dublin this year that the wider public might know, but they will know by come maybe round four, round five of the league, because they're going to keep putting in these performances. And it's their manager, the faith and trust that he has put in them to give these guys a go. And they mightn't be from senior hurling clubs either, Jackie. I think that's very important to remember, that these guys could be from intermediate clubs as well in Dublin, or the lesser known powers of hurling up in Dublin. So massive stuff for them. Like, you know, Davey brings his own thing, lads. You know, there's always a bounce with him as a new manager. I thought we'd get it off the Antrim lads, but, you know, I suppose no more so than a lot of teams, he maybe might be in a kind of a transition period as well, trying to put his own stamp in it. I'm sure they're training very, very hard, Jackie. So, but again, with the nature of Division 1B, with two up, two down, you know, you lose one, you lose next week again, and like, you, nobody in 1B wants to be going down to two. That's just the way it is. Everybody's looking to be in the top half or challenging for that 1B final. So they'll have it all to do now in the next round. But I think as regards Dublin, massive performance, great way to kick off things with their new manager. And, you know, it might get a bit of a, with Nafina winning as well, and you might know better than me, Rory, you're up there, and Jackie, you're up there as well. But it might generate a bit more interest in Dublin hurling, because as I said before, 20 Dublin hurlers could walk down the street in Dublin and they mightn't recognise 19 of them. And with the footballers, they'll recognise the guy that's maybe number 27, 28 on the panel. And you'd hope that Dublin hurling might get a bit of a kick from Nafina's win and with the new manager and get a few wins going in the league. They might have a bit of momentum for him, Jackie.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll finish off on this, Rory, but I actually think Shane is absolutely right. The bounce that you're going to get from Nafina winning, but also, and look, maybe I'm involved in Kilmacud Croaks. People know that. There's a lot of the lads are involved at the weekend, but even just the buzz around the place, chatting to people coming out of Croke Park, there was a sense that Dublin hurling is moving in the right direction. And I think for hurling fans generally, they need more Dublins at the table. So I think the weekend was actually a really good thing for hurling fans.
Yeah, and the week before, I mean, I was in Croke Park the week before when the Fianna beat the Sars in that club final. To see a club in the north inner city win an All-Ireland club title in such a massive urban area, that's a brilliant thing for her. That's a brilliant thing for hurling. I know people might necessarily appreciate us saying that, and it was hard on Sars, no doubt. So that's a massive boost for the game. I think when we see those Nafina guys go back in, and I hope Liam Rush gives it another go because he's well able, I think they'll definitely give it a boost. I think the target for Dublin should be to get minimum promotion, make that Division 1B final, and try and have a real crack off the Leinster Championship and even try and go and win it. Now, that's not going to be easy because we saw yesterday the way Kilkenny played. They're not going to be relinquishing that title all that too easy. But I think there are targets for Dublin Hurling to kind of go after, but they're going to need a big breakthrough win. That's where they've struggled a little bit in the past when the tide looked to be about to turn and then they flopped maybe on a big occasion and then all of a sudden the whole air goes out of the balloon. If that opportunity presents itself this year, it's something that they really need to get over the line. And I think they're capable of it because this manager is an exceptional coach, really well organized, and he'll definitely get the best out of them.
Yep. Definitely one to watch as the league goes on. We'll continue this chat later in the week because we'll be looking ahead, of course, to Cork Limerick and all the other hurling and another cracking weekend of league action to come. Thanks a million to Shane and to Enda for joining us. And everybody, enjoy your week. We'll talk to you later in the week.